The Ecology Action Center in Normal is planning its fourth household hazardous waste collection event for this fall. Center Director Michael Brown says they have perfected the model of this public-private partnership, stepping into the gap left by the state abandoning its mandate.
We found a system that works, at least for the time being, in the interim until state funding does return to a more reliable cycle where we can count on that again. Our program really wasn't intended to be a permanent replacement for state funding. The state has always had responsibility to help local communities on this, and we do hope that returns at some point. This is working for right now, and we're one of the few communities in the entire state that is still providing this service in the absence of reliable state support for it.
If it is the state's responsibility, what's the trade-off? I mean, why not wait until they do take up what they're supposed to do?
Well, we know that, in the absence of the service, regardless of who's actually paying for it, that the problem is going to continue to grow. And people do dispose of things improperly, throwing hazardous waste in the trash or down the drain if they do not have the proper options. And we know that even with this, even with our every other year locally funded hazardous waste collection events, there's still people that call us we get daily calls about this issue, but there's people calling us, adults who have come home to clean out their parents' homes when they've, moved into a residential, retirement community, or maybe they've passed away and they have all these materials to get rid of on short notice. They can't wait 2 years for our next collection event. They don't have the time or the luxury of driving up to Naperville for one of the permanent facilities. And so we know that people get frustrated by the lack of options. And so still, more often than not, people are probably disposing of things improperly, and that is a risk to our health. That is a risk to our water supplies. It's a risk to our environment, and so there will be ramifications. And so the more that we can increase the availability of proper disposal options, we're going to help safeguard the public health.
What are the signs that the state will or will not take up their mandate in the near future?
So they have resumed scheduling of events. I mean, there was a gap for a while, but, in recent years, they have resumed it. It's not as regular as it used to be. But this spring in particular, while we did not get awarded an event by the only EPA, there was the most events I recall ever being scheduled by the IEPA all at once. I think there was something like 15 to 20 different events scheduled and funded by the Illinois EPA for hazardous waste collection. And so that to me is a sign that, they're trying to catch up. They're trying to help meet the need. We know there was a lot of good provisions in the most recent state budget. I haven't looked closely enough to see, how hazardous waste is funded in that yet, but there's a lot of good environmental provisions, and so I do think the current administration is prioritizing the environment.
So this might be the last one you have to do.
That would be exciting to me, if that's the case. I mean, we still, going forward, would likely, still coordinate this on behalf of the community with the state, as we did in the past when the state, provided the bulk of the funding. We still were the local entity, and so we'll still always play a role. But yes, to not have to go to the community and ask for contributions, to not look to the local governments to help provide, actually the bulk of the cost of the event, that would help everybody and free up resources for other needs in the community.
Let's talk about those costs. You're seeking $35,000 from the community. You have nine different partners, including mm-hmm. the municipalities and a number of businesses mm-hmm. who are contributing either space, as in Rivian's case, mm-hmm. and a facility in which to conduct the collection, or cash. What is the total cost of this beast?
We don't know. We never know until it's all said and done. And so we have learned through this experience that the whole fundraising campaign, which starts several months before the actual event, that proves to be actually an awareness campaign as well. And so in the past, there was limited marketing budget for events right before the event itself. But now that we do this fundraising several months ahead, we are increasing awareness of the need for proper disposal, but also of the upcoming event. And so attendance has increased. It's much higher than it used to be. The volumes of materials continues to increase. And so the costs do go up. And so we're always planning for that bigger and bigger event, and as well want to increase the marketing so that we can get more people there. And so the perfect event is one where, you know, we come in exactly on budget and we don't have any leftovers and where we don't come up short at all.
What have the costs been for the last several?
So we've been ranging about $140,000, $150,000. That usually doesn't include actual EAC staff time. That comes from other funds. And so the majority of that is really just the cost of the contractor, which is, you know, a hazardous waste service that comes with a team of chemists to properly identify, you know, bulk up, prepare for transport, all these, you know, thousands of different materials we're talking about, transport them to facilities for treatment, in some cases recycling, but actually a lot of this can't be recycled. So it's stabilized. Some of it is stored in hazardous waste landfills for perpetuity. And so there's just a tremendous amount of cost right there for that service with that contractor.
So it's worth making the point then that the $35,000 you're asking the public to contribute is less than a quarter of the actual total.
That is correct, yes. It's just really, you know, a very small portion of the true cost of the event.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Michael Brown is the executive director of the Ecology Action Center in Normal. They're planning household hazardous waste collection for sometime later this year, perhaps September. Is that beginning to be firm?
That's ballpark is what we're looking at. But yes, once we're further along in the fundraising, we'll know for sure and be able to announce a date. And so, yeah, we look forward to being able to, yes, be more firm about that in a couple months here during the summer.
When my in-laws sold off the family farmstead, there was a huge barrel of just motor oil.
Right.
Collected from farm equipment over the years, and just, it's amazing it hadn't rusted out,
sure,
the barrel. How often do you see that sort of quantity come from one source? How often do you see, how many different kinds of things do you see?
Sure. And so things like that, while that's not unheard of, that's not terribly common for somebody to bring in a 55-gallon drum, part of that is actually because of the regulations, and we do have to educate people about this in our marketing, is that farming, if that's actually agricultural, you know, waste from a farming operation, that's considered business waste by law, and we cannot accept that. We are permitted at these events only for taking residentially generated waste. And so that does usually rule out large volumes of chemicals or automotive fluids like that. I mean, smaller volumes, yeah, people have from changing their own oil at home and what have you. And even if there is a large volume, if we can, you know, get some verification this is residential generated, then we will take it. But it's pretty rare anymore that we would see a 55-gallon drum. And so, yes, to the bigger question of, you know, the volumes and types of materials, I mean, it is pretty varied. I mean, we do have a list of what we do and do not accept at these events. There's some limitations. For example, smoke detectors, which people have in their homes. Everybody needs to have those in their homes. Those are actually radioactive. And so we can't take those because that's kind of a special type of waste that most even of the hazardous waste materials handlers do not handle radioactive waste like that. And so that's something, there's actually mailback programs for those that we encourage people to take advantage of. But yeah, so there's limitations what we can take both for safety reasons, but also financial reasons. If we open this up to anything and everything, then that budget would be much, much higher.
What else can't you take? What is something that people should deal with in a different way than this event?
We can't take ammunition. We can't take, actually, latex paint is not hazardous. People always look at this as an opportunity to get rid of old paint, and it is if it's spray paint or if it's oil-based paint or if it's polyurethane or stain or varnish, turpentine. all those except for latex paint, because that's not hazardous. And the thing is, it costs us about the same as the hazardous oil-based paint to get rid of. And so we don't want it. That, again, would greatly inflate the budget. People can dispose of it themselves by drying it out completely and then putting it in the trash. We have a great video on our website that shows you how to do that, a nice effective way of actually pouring it out in thin layers so it dries out completely. So things like that. It's just going to help save everybody money if they do not bring latex paint.
And what are some things that people might not think are eligible and that they would just toss but really shouldn't and should bring to you?
So we take pharmaceuticals, so old medicines. Actually, it's usually the normal police department that assists us with that. And so that actually comes at no cost through this program. So they assist with that portion. We've long taken e-waste, and that's shifted a little bit in that our former nonprofit partner that used to help us with that is no longer in the e-waste business because there's been significant changes on the state level in e-waste recycling. And so we do plan to still continue to take e-waste. There's still a lot of those large CRT TVs or monitors out there. It's amazing. Several years ago, they said there was maybe 10 years of them left. I think even now we still have 10 years of dealing with those left. There's still people have been keeping them in their basements or wherever. I don't know why they're holding on to them as they continue to add other TVs too. But yeah, we're still looking at some of those large, bulky electronics right now.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking household hazardous waste disposal and a collection event hoped for later this year, perhaps in September, at the Rivian Auto Plant.
That's correct.
With us is Michael Brown of the Ecology Action Center. What are some of your past results? How much have you taken out of landfills or prevented from being disposed of improperly?
Sure. And so we've been averaging something between, I would say, 18,000 to as high as 27,000 gallons of materials each year. Our highest year to date in volume was 2015. That's when we reached over 27,000 gallons of materials. And so that to me is a huge success to be, saving that portion and disposing of it properly. But at the same time, we do have data from some statewide waste generation analysis that was done several years ago by the Illinois EPA. It was called the State Waste Characterization Study, and essentially they looked at county by county the waste generation and the various streams and essentially the composition. And this was a very detailed study. And so through that, we have reasonably good data on the actual generation rate of hazardous waste by our community. And while 27,000 gallons is a lot to recover, that still is, I would say that's probably only about a quarter of the generation rate of what we are producing on an annual basis. And so there still is a lot of material that's going unrecovered. And that's why we continue to try and grow this event and increase awareness. And yeah, we got to make it more accessible, more available, more convenient. Just like single stream curbside automated recycling reduced the participation barriers for most households in Bloomington Normal and really increased participation rates and volumes of materials recycled. We need to come up with similar strategies to reduce the barriers for participation in proper disposal of hazardous wastes.
So if 75% of the waste generated in this part of the state, because you attract people from more than just McLean County to these events, what happens to that? What's the environmental damage? Where does it go?
Well, if I can clarify, so for these locally funded events, these are limited to McLean County residents. When we receive state funding, it is open to all Illinois residents, anybody within driving distance. But these events we are able to limit. And so this is just McLean County waste.
Do you check?
We do. And so then the other portion of this, there are some alternate programs in the community. There is, you can recycle used motor oil at some, automotive service stations. There is the four permanent hazardous waste collection facilities, which are not convenient, but people do utilize them. And so there are other channels. And so even though we're, recovering only a fourth of the generation here at our every other year events, there are other channels. And so I'd like to think that the actual recovery rate is still higher than that. Hopefully It'd be nice if I was approaching at least 50%, but yeah, so the improper disposal, and people still dump things down the drain. People dump things, you know, whether it is their basement sink or it is the storm drain right out at the curb. I mean, this still happens. We do have with Bloomington, Normal, and McLean County, each of them has a stormwater hotline. If people see others abusing this and pouring their used motor oil from that oil change that you just did in the garage down the storm drain, this is something that should be reported. That is, you know, definitely a direct threat to our local environment and water supplies. So that still happens. Hiding things in the trash, I mean, it doesn't take much to be completely, you know, transparent. I mean, you put things in a couple plastic bags and nobody's going to know what's in there. And so we know that still happens. So all this going to our regular municipal solid waste landfills, those are not designed for the long-term, you know, containment of these more corrosive, explosive, flammable materials and even things interacting with each other in the landfills. And so this can eventually lead to corrosion of the liners and essentially things leaching out into the groundwater supplies. And so how long that takes, we don't know. There's so many variables in terms of geology, but also the materials put in there, the concentration, the exact mix of different materials. And so much of that is subject to speculation. We're talking about a future risk there. It's probably going to take a while. So we're going to have to, you know, here and elsewhere, you know, across the country. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, but the thing is that so many of our consumer products are actually, you know, the toxicity, the hazardous nature of consumer products. There's so many different options and so many different products now. If you compare, you know, our current products with what was on the shelves, you know, 50 years ago, not that there weren't very potent and dangerous products then, but not nearly the volume and choice. And so we really need to, as consumers, be working to reverse this. If we want a safer local environment, a safer household environment, we need to be choosing safer alternatives to some of these hazardous type products that are on the shelves at the local stores.
You mentioned lowering barriers to participation in recycling household hazardous waste or collecting it. What have other states done that's more effective than what Illinois is doing?
So permanent facilities are definitely part of the answer, and so we've long been looking at the possibility of a downstate permanent collection facility. Ideally, we would like one here in McLean County, and that's something that is actually in the recently approved 20-year solid waste management plan for McLean County, Bloomington, Normal, is to look at that and actually launch a feasibility study into the costs and actually, you know, how we would make that happen. Just the practicality of a McLean County facility or partnering with some other Central Illinois communities. Peoria County is actually getting a permanent facility, but it's going to be private as opposed to the current public facilities that are up in the Chicago area in Rockford. And so we can't assume that we will have access to the Peoria facility when it does come online, but that's something that we can look to try and negotiate. And how much would it cost for either our residents to have access to it, or perhaps we can, there is actually a provision in the law that allows for actually essentially non-permitted one-day hazardous waste collection events as long as we get the materials to a permitted facility the same day. And so perhaps we could do quarterly collection events here in McLean County and pay Peoria County to take the materials. And so there's options like that. Something, you know, totally other end of the spectrum. There's, I believe, at least one Chicago area community, if not a few, that actually offer curbside hazardous waste collection service. And this isn't, you know, the same as recycling in that the truck doesn't come around every week or every other week, but rather each household gets one free pickup a year and they can schedule it when they wish. And so this really increases the accessibility. You get it when you want it, but you do just need to plan wisely because you get one pickup.
How much has that increased collection? in the communities that do it.
I believe that their success rates have definitely increased. I don't know their exact numbers, but the solid waste coordinators that work on those programs really think that that's a very successful and effective way to go about it.
Regarding permanent facilities, not holding you to this, but what's a ballpark cost to start and operate one?
We have some numbers on that, and off the top of my head, I can't really throw that out there because it's all relative to, you know, our local population and even the greater radius. You know, what is, and that's part of the feasibility study. From what radius would you draw a population to utilize it? And other factors that we would look at would be if we're, again, running this as our local facility, assuming no state cooperation and sponsorship of the costs, then how do we pay for it? And part of that might be looking at, you know, making it essentially free, no fee, no direct fee for local residents to use it, but perhaps we charge out-of-county residents to use it. And so by that way, we can help offset the costs for our local residents. Perhaps even we look at broadening the permitting of it so even we could take business-generated hazardous waste. And then, again, we charge for that, and that is a revenue source to offset the cost. And so there's a lot of different considerations. And so to put out, you know, the startup costs and operating costs, that would be pure speculation at this point.
Michael Brown is the executive director of the Ecology Action Center in Normal, planning for a household hazardous waste collection event later in the fall. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie.
People can contribute to the effort at hhwmclain.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.